I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today we sit down with Jung Ho Park, the conductor and artistic director for the Cape Cod Symphony Orchestra. He also leads the San Diego Chamber Orchestra, the World Youth Symphony Orchestra, and the Summer Orchestra at the Interlochen Center for the Arts. We'll be talking about the upcoming season, where we'll also hear from John Nakamatsu, who will kick off the new season with a tribute to the great pianist Van Cliburn. First, we're going to look back. Jung Ho Park came to Cape Cod Symphony in 2007 with an ambitious vision. Welcome back to the program.
Great to be here, Mindy.
So you now looking back, 2007, I know a lot's happened since then. Yeah. Do you feel like your vision is realized, especially with this idea of bringing classical music to the younger generation? It seems like we've done a lot in that area.
We have. We've focused a lot on education. You know, for me, it's not just about young people, but it's about the young people in all of us. Mm-hmm. We talk about 6-year-olds and 7-year-olds, but I just want to make classical music and symphonic music accessible, joyous, emotional, meaningful, relevant. And so it's not a hard sell, actually, to young mm-hmm. people.
Yeah.
They think it's a miracle. What we do is special to them. All you have to do is serve it up with love. Mm-hmm. If you have an open heart and your message is sincere and you care about them, they receive it very well.
Yeah, well, I love George Schaar, who's been running many of these educational programs for some time. I'm not sure what his director of community education, is that what his title is now? But anyway, he said something yesterday. I love this quote. Classical music is cool if presented in the right way at the right time.
Yeah, isn't that true?
It's so true.
And that right time is early. That's when they're completely open. They don't have any prejudice about mm-hmm. anything. They just receive it and drink it up. And classical music, like I said before, is a wonderful thing if presented on their own terms. Mm-hmm. So we have so many different programs. We go into the classroom. We bring them into the concert hall. We spread it all over mm-hmm. the Cape in the morning. For example, there's a program called Music in the Morning. Mm-hmm. Music Works. Music Works Every Day. Mm-hmm. And across the Cape, these elementary school kids listen to classical music for free over their speaker system. It's introduced by their principal saying, "Good morning, boys and girls. Today we're going to listen to Vivaldi." Mm-hmm. And did you know that Vivaldi was a Baroque composer? Baroque music was, you know, blah, blah, blah. And let's listen. So they start their music with beautiful classical music. And we not only find the teachers say that their kids are more focused, they're calmer, they perform better, and there's studies for that as well, but the teachers say, what a civil way for them to begin their work day as well.
Yeah, so 5 minutes every day, and this is K through 6, 32 schools. Now that you're, I guess, and there's some more, you know, wanting to sign up for this. Why wouldn't you?
Yes.
So let's talk about that for a second. This is a national program that's mm-hmm. that's repackaged. So what does that mean?
It was under a different name called Music Memory. It was I can't remember actually the national name, but it's repackaged for the Cape. We own it mm-hmm. on the Cape, so that if a school has it in the Cape, they come through us. We provide the package. And what's so great about this, Mindy, it's cheap. It's only like,
I was going to ask you, how is it funded? Yeah.
For only like, you know, $200 or $300, they buy this packet. It lasts forever. Mm. It never goes out. It's a huge binder of CDs. And so it pays for itself, or we actually find funding, help the schools find funding for it. And then it's pennies mm-hmm. for each student if you sort of divvy it up.
Yeah. So before we get into some more of these education programs, which they're now administered through the Cape Cod Conservatory. So the Cape Cod mm-hmm. Symphony Orchestra and the Conservatory merged in 2010.
Right.
So tell us about that merger. Why and how it's working?
Well, it's a marriage that made so much sense. I mean, if you think about it, the Cape Cod Symphony performs beautiful music. We inspire people through live performance. And then hopefully people want to make music for themselves. It's sort of empowering them. So the conservatory teaches not only music, but dance and art and everything that's creative comes through the conservatory. So the conservatory was at a point where they were searching for a good business model. They were looking for a leadership and a vision, and we had that at that time. We brought the two together, and we've through Stephanie Weaver, who's the managing director of the conservatory, she buys in the same vision we have, that great art should be available to every single person, mm-hmm. not just the virtuoso, not the wunderkind, not just the person who's ultra talented. We do service those people, but also just the parent who wants their child to have a great full experience about life and appreciation. also the adult who has
at all ages, yeah.
Like you,
like me,
who has had a dream to make music. And I get this question all the time: am I too old? Is
no,
it too late?
Yes, never.
That's the right answer.
Never,
never. We have teachers who are expert at bringing the adult to realize their dream.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for telling these stories, but you know, do you know George Shar's mother?
Yes, I do.
She plays the drums, and
yes.
She was, I think, 90-something, early 90s, and she still teaches.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes. That's the thing that music does, or and the arts in general, is that you're never too old. There are conductors who conduct in their 80s and 90s, or people mm-hmm. play. And you know what also I love about the Cape? There's so many groups that you can participate in.
Yeah, yeah.
That you know, bands and orchestras, and it really, music keeps, you know, arts keeps going no matter how old you are.
Exactly. All right, so we mentioned this music works every day, where mm-hmm. these kids are listening to 5 minutes of classical music every morning and learning a little bit about it. Mm-hmm. So then there's this other program, Music Memory.
Yeah,
I love this.
Oh.
I got to be a judge 1 year, but tell us what the program is, and then we'll talk about the contest.
It is the culmination of some of the greatest games and ideas for young kids. If you remember the show Name That Tune.
That's right. Yeah.
Some of us remember that, the television show. And it was also a radio show before that as well, where contestants would get together and you would have to name a tune based upon just a couple of notes. And that's what we do. These kids come together from all over the Cape, and they listen to classical music all year long. And they learn it through the most miraculous system, through something called music maps. And they learn these pieces by visualization. It started off back in Texas in the early part of the 20th century through the Depression era. And it survived, and now the kids are using computers, and you learn a piece of music like Beethoven's Fifth, ba 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 bum, and you go through this visual map. Maybe you're going through, let's say, a forest, and you hear ba 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 bum, you see these little birds, three birds and a big bird, ba 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 ba, and then you walk down the path a little bit more, and you see three other birds, ba 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 ba, and ba 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 ba, I mean the whole flock of birds, ba 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 ba. Each piece has a different story to tell. And that's how these kids learn it. They don't have to read music. They learn it through this visualization. And it's the most natural, fluid way for a young person to get this deep into their bones. In fact, I know people who are in their 80s and 90s and learn this way, and they still recognize right. the piece. And in this competition, at this Name This Tune competition, they have to name the composer, and they have to spell the name correctly. They have to name the piece, and these the most amazing part of this, Mindy, is that not only do these kids get all the answers right, but they're cheering and they're high-fiving each
yeah,
other.
So cute, yeah. But it's so, it, you know, as I said, I got to be a judge, and I did not know all the answers, I can tell you that. Good thing I had them in front of me. But to see these little kids, like they're in these teams, I don't remember how many schools, but there's a part of the orchestra is play. So they're playing this live, and, you know, they play a little bit of it, and you just see their faces up, they go, oh. You know, and then they stand up and they, you know, answer the, and but there's, they really are. They're so cute. I mean, and they're so excited.
There's a great example that they don't know that classical music has had a history mm-hmm. of being formal and being, you know, elite, which we're trying to bust that myth completely. They see it as a sporting event.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Then we have also the Young People's Concert, where the orchestra performs for fourth graders from across the Cape once a year. And this is, they come to the Performing Arts Center at Barnstable
yes,
High School.
Yes.
This year's coming up November 13th.
Uh-huh.
So tell us about that program. I'm sure it's different every year. Do you decide what's going to be played at that?
I discuss it with George Shar, mm-hmm. Who is our, as you mentioned, our Pied Piper of music yeah. education, and then Joan Landry, who's our associate conductor and leads those young people's concerts with great. She's a wonderful host and so friendly and a great conductor. And we come up with a different theme every year. I believe this theme this year, if I'm not mistaken, might be about either about the arts or possibly about math and science.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is that every year the theme ties into major curriculum, mm-hmm. that these concerts are not just about music and they hear great music from wonderful musicians, but they learn something that pairs together what they're learning in the classroom.
So it's similar to what the quartets that go into the schools then?
Actually a little bit different, because when they come to these YPCs, Young People's Concerts, they're actually learning real curriculum,
mm-hmm.
history, social studies, math, arts, mm-hmm. and just through the most entertaining and interactive way. When we go into the classroom, when we bring quartets, they're learning life lessons.
Oh, life lessons.
Life
right.
lessons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, that we're, for example, our first one was about anti-bullying.
Mm-hmm. How, this is brilliant.
It is. Mindy, you know, one of the things that I noticed as a music director for so many years is that when we brought musicians into the classroom and they were just saying, this is a trumpet and this is a violin and this is a quarter note and this is a whole note, the kids would look at it and go, okay, well,
gloss over.
That's interesting. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, bringing a lemming in or bringing yeah. a cougar in. You go, okay, well, that's very nice. I wanted them to realize who these musicians were as people and that we had a message and that music was a metaphor for life. Because mm-hmm. isn't it
yeah.
that way?
Absolutely. Well, I'm just going back to the anti-bullying for a second.
Yeah.
I thought this was fascinating. I was like, how do you teach anti-bullying
right.
through a quartet? And I guess what happened was you had four musicians. Mm-hmm. One was a woman, three were men, and the violinist was the woman.
Yes.
And they'd say, okay, what should we play? And they, you know, one guy says, well, let's play this. And they play that. And it's like, which way? And every time she's saying Mozart, let's play whatever by Mozart. And they're ignoring her. And they're
yes.
playing all these. And then she gets mad and she
right.
storms off into the corner and
right.
with her back to them. And they say, well, we don't need her anyway. And then they go to play. And well, guess what? They need the melody. So they go, they apologize. She comes back. And it sort of teaches this. But in the meantime, the kids are cheering on, you know, her. They go, no, Mozart, Mozart.
they get sympathy for these people. And then they realize that they themselves often see other people treat other people badly, mm-hmm. and they'll remember this. The great success for this is not only with the kids' reaction, but also my dear colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
How many musicians do you know who've been trained to play Mozart and Beethoven and Bach are willing to be actors as
right.
well? And we're all hams anyway, and I think that they enjoy being seen as more than people who just wear tuxedos on stage.
Exactly, yeah. So some of the other themes that you've done is you've done geography, math. Mm-hmm. And so how do you work somehow with the Department of Education to develop
yes.
this curriculum stuff?
Oh. We do. George is very, very careful about making sure that we meet state standards
mm-hmm.
and that the information we give out is accurate. And we put together a script, we have them checked by principals and teachers to make sure that there's mm-hmm. there's certain authenticity there.
Right. Yeah. And I can imagine when the first time you approached a school and said, hey, we'd like to bring the quartet in and teach you something about anti-bullying.
Well, they don't know what to expect. It's
yeah.
like, you know, what can you do? But now they're believers.
Yeah. We're talking with Jung Ho Pak, artistic director and conductor of the Cape Cod Symphony Orchestra. 866-999-4626 is our toll free number if you'd like to join our conversation. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a short break.
We are at the Loeb Building at the MBL in Woods Hole, and there is a corner here that has some very high resonances, or what are known as room modes. These are the fact that all buildings have certain frequencies that are louder than the other frequencies in the room. And this particular corner, which is in a stairwell, happens to have a nice resonance pretty near B flat. So we're going to walk into this corner. I'm going to be singing B flat. And all of a sudden, my voice will disappear. And all you will hear is the resonance, because the resonance is almost equal to my voice. Okay, the note we're searching for is somewhere around this. You can't even hear my voice, right? And that's how I discovered this. You're just talking and you, wow, what is that weirdness jumping out at me from the, oh. This is Glenway Fripp.
You're listening to the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH Radio.
You're listening to The Point. We are talking with Jung Ho Pak, conductor and artistic director for the Cape Cod Symphony Orchestra. We've been talking about music education, but of course we've got the new season almost upon us here. We're just about to start the new season.
Yeah.
So how are you feeling now? A few years later, if anybody has not seen you perform, you talked earlier about that passion, and I think it's contagious when somebody's passionate about what they do, and you just look like you are having a grand time up there.
Thanks, I appreciate that. I see myself as a door, or a window, and as big as the door gets is that the orchestra can fit through it. Mm-hmm. So if I'm a big, joyous, empathetic door, the orchestra will see that and they will walk through that door. Mm-hmm. If I'm small and tight and stuffy, then they can't pass through that. Mm-hmm. So the orchestra and the audience can see each other through that. Yeah. I try to be that window.
Yeah, it's awesome. One of the things I like too is you really put a lot of thought into what you're going to be presenting. Mm-hmm. And again, this is, I guess, kind of opening up that welcoming everybody in. I remember the year you added you had the guys that do the Beatles thing on Broadway.
Yes.
That was so much fun.
Yes.
And it's not something you don't expect.
No.
Yeah.
No, it makes so much sense. You know, we've been talking a little bit about Star Trek, and I realize the people walking out on the street have their iPods filled with different kinds of music. And one of my privileges of being artistic director is I get to bring all of that life into the concert hall. Mm-hmm. So whether it's Beatles or later on this season, we're doing music of Billy Joel and Elton John.
Fun.
With a fabulous pianist and vocalist. I like people to know that we're them mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about opening concert is coming up, Playing with Fire. Tell us about it.
This is a concert. Well, it's called Playing with Fire on many levels. First off, we open the concert with our favorite. I shouldn't say favorite because every soloist is wonderful. But really, someone who we have back quite often is John Nakamatsu, mm-hmm. who is the gold medalist of the Van Cliburn competition from about 12 years ago or something mm-hmm. like that.
And 1997?
It's about 16 years ago. He is a fabulous pianist, and he plays with fire, and he's going to perform the piece that he actually won the gold medal with. Mm-hmm. And that's the Rachmaninoff Third Piano Concerto, fiendishly difficult.
Yes.
And we're doing this in homage to a man who we both knew. I had the pleasure of conducting Van Cliburn before he passed.
Oh, you did? Wow.
Yes. I just feel so lucky. It's like, you know, being on stage with Betty Davis or some icon. And he was the nicest guy. But we felt so passionately about, you know, remembering him that this concert, we're going to open the concert and dedicate it to Van Cliburn.
There's a documentary that was made, too, called Playing with Fire.
Indeed.
That talked about the competition, and John was in part of that documentary as well.
Exactly.
All right. So we have an interview with John that we're going to go to in a minute, but sure. He couldn't be here this morning, so I talked to him yesterday. But let's talk a little bit about Van Cliburn for folks who may not know who he was.
Yeah.
This is an interesting guy. He played for heads of state in every U.S. president from Harry Truman to Barack Obama. But, I mean, just brilliant, like from age 3 or something.
Well, it seems like it. He won the competition, the first Tchaikovsky piano competition, when he was very, very young. He was this tall, lanky Texan out of nowhere.
Right.
And during the heart of the Cold War.
Yeah. And the whole idea of this competition was for the Russians to be able to show off, you know, they had Sputnik and our superiority. And here we have this Texan come in and blow him away.
Right. Playing a Russian composer.
Right.
And he played it so beautifully. If you get a chance, everyone should go to YouTube and listen to the recording of his performance of Tchaikovsky's first piano concerto. It is so sensitive and so musical that the Russian people said, you know, thank you to him for having him teach them how to love Tchaikovsky again.
He had an 8-minute standing ovation.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
And when you met him toward the end of his career, and he was still playing quite beautifully at the end of his career, he had that childlike innocence that you see, that Yo-Yo Ma mm-hmm. has as well. These great artists are so humble.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of who was the president of the Soviet Union at that time.
Nikita Khrushchev.
And they looked to him and said, you know, because they were a little worried giving first prize to American. And he said something like, well, is he the best? And they said, yes, I said, give him, if he's the best, give him the award. Yeah. That was great. So as we mentioned, pianist John Nakamatsu is the featured performer for the season opener. He was considered an underdog going into that 10th Van Cliburn competition.
Yes.
And as I mentioned, he was unable to join us this morning, but I did get a chance to talk to him yesterday. In June 1997, you won the gold medal at the 10th Van Cliburn International Piano Competition in Fort Worth, Texas, something an American hadn't done in 16 years. This was your second and final attempt in this competition. Bring us back to that. What was going through your mind in this particular competition?
Well, I knew I was old. I mean,
almost 30, right?
That's right. I mean, one of the problems for young people trying to make a name in a competition is that they end for competitors who are reaching their 30th birthday, and at the time I was 28. So for me, it was really a last shot at a major event such as the Cliburn. But I also knew that, you know, having gone through all of these similar competitions in the past with varying degrees of success, that you never can pin your hopes or your career on one event. And so I prepared for it as I prepared for many competitions in the past and thought, you know, I'll give it my best shot, but it may actually be my last chance at any type of significant musical career.
So this here, this is in your head. This is your last shot. And the piece you chose to play in that competition is very challenging. So tell us about the piece and why you decided to play that.
Well, in the final round, you play two piano concertos. And my very last piece was the Rachmaninoff Third Concerto. And I chose it because, one, I thought that, you know, you had to play a piece for which you had a great affinity. And, of course, this piece, having been with me since I was very young, was really one of my most favorite works in the repertoire. And two, I thought it's a great competition piece. If you play it well, it makes a wonderful statement, and there's so much for the piano to do. And in many ways, to integrate with the orchestra is more of a challenge in a piece where the piano is so predominant so much of the time. So I felt that maybe I could use it as a vehicle to kind of cap off all my other competition performances. And it was really just something I had wanted to play all my life, too. So
yeah, well, for people who aren't familiar and are trying to picture that, we've got a little clip that we're going to play so that people can hear just how challenging this piece is. And you will be performing this piece when you visit the Cape for that first concert of the opening concert of the season, Playing with Fire.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it very much.
Yeah. One of the things I thought really interesting, a judge in a national competition in 1993 said you would never have a music career because you lack the talent and technique to play the piano and that you should find something easier to do with your life. Well, it just goes to show you that, you know, you can't, you've got to keep trying, because this judge obviously didn't know what they were talking about.
Well, you know, you have, it's difficult. It's difficult to hear that, I think, at any stage of life, but especially when you're young and you're really kind of getting doors slammed in your face and you're investing so much of yourself and your time. But what you have to remember is that, you know, people will say things, people have their own opinions and people have their own agendas, and as long as you realize that, then, you know, you'll probably just use those experiences to grow and develop a thick armor.
A thick armor.
Which we all need, I think.
You know, and I know that you've judged some competitions yourself. Do you think about that judge when you're judging and try to be, I know you have to be realistic, but you don't have to be mean, right?
Well, that's actually a great point. You know, I think of that often, because I think of how that could potentially devastate somebody, and I try to do the exact opposite. I mean, obviously, if you're on a jury, you have to make a decision, but your decision doesn't have to come from a space of you know, malevolence or ill will. And I think, you know, as long as you're positive and constructive and have reasons for what you decide, then, you know, that's all you can do.
Yeah. All right, so that competition really changed your life. You quit your job as a school teacher, pursued this career as a classical pianist, but you'd been playing since you were a kid. Were you four, I think, when you first started dabbling? You took the same piano teacher since age six.
Right.
You had one piano. That must have been some good piano teacher, huh?
I was so lucky to get her in the very beginning. My father worked with her husband, and that's the only connection we had to her, and really to the music world, because my parents aren't musical at all.
Wow. So this, you decided, I mean, why at this point? You quit the job as the German language teacher at the high school and you decided, okay, this is it. Was this the competition that you said, okay, this is what's going to launch my career? I mean, why at that moment? Why not earlier?
Well, the win really did it for me. I mean, I just immediately started touring and, you know, was in my first season, had over 100 concerts. And so it wasn't like I really even had a choice at that point. But before that, you know, even as I maybe would get 10 concerts in a year, it certainly wasn't enough to sustain a living. So quitting a job was really not even a question. But the Clyburn, you know, opened the door and suddenly I was, you know, being booked by all these presenters who wouldn't have looked at me, you know, the night before. Mm-hmm. So for me, yes, it really, it changed my life very dramatically and very pleasantly. Although I miss teaching, I'm very, very happy to be doing this now.
Yeah. And it's funny, you have this crazy schedule. You're touring a lot and all over the world. And most people, that gets very, you know, draining. People talk about, oh, the travel. But you like the travel.
I don't mind. You know, the funny thing is that when you're on a plane or you're, it's the one place where you don't have to really think about being on. You know, I can go to sleep, I can read a book, I can do my email, and no one's going to call me, and I don't have to practice. And it's very peaceful,
it's a break.
Right.
Well, we should mention you have another Cape connection. You're also the co-artistic director of the Cape Cod Chamber Music Festival, so you got to spend some time here this summer.
Oh, it's so great. It's something that my wife and I look forward to every year because we enjoy being on the Cape so much. And then, you know, having concerts for 4 weeks just kind of scattered throughout the Cape has for us and for my colleague John Manassi been just a wonderful connection. We've known so many great musicians and people, and it's something we look forward to every single year.
And as we mentioned, that this opening performance is dedicated to Van Cliburn, who was still alive when you won the 10th annual competition. Did you get to spend any time with him?
Yes, actually, I got to know him pretty well after that time because, you know, he would come to concerts every so often, and I would go to Fort Worth, of course, for, you know, work, either performing here and there or doing something with the foundation, and he was much more present. Even though he really officially had nothing to do with the Van Cliburn Foundation itself, he would very much be a part of the scene, and for me, getting to talk to him and hearing his stories and even just knowing him as a person, you know, and one who was most kind and generous and gregarious, really was a very positive thing for me. And I'm so happy I had that time. I'm sorry that people who, from this point on, attend the competition won't get that because I think it was just the most magical part of being at the Clyburn.
Yeah, exactly. And so Playing with Fire, Saturday, September 21st, and Sunday, September 22nd, where you, as we said, will be playing Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 3, the piece of music that changed your life. Really looking forward to seeing that.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
What an inspiring story he has. You know, when you think about, you know, artists who are going, you know, I'm struggling. And he has this judge who says, oh, you're never going to make it. And then look at him. And, you know, you just never know, do you?
It's one of my favorite stories of the competition because he was totally unknown. He was not doing the circuit. He was an American, you know. Like you said, he was toward the aging out. And here he wins this competition. I mean, I think he's one of the most well-known pianists. But I have to say that of all the winners I've had the pleasure of working with a couple of them, he really has exquisite taste as a musician. When you listen to him, it's almost a lesson in proportion and pianism in a way that we're so lucky to have him on the Cape.
Yeah, yeah. So back to that first concert. You also have the Chatham Chorale and the Falmouth Chorale.
Right, the ladies of the Chatham and Falmouth Chorales. They're joining us in one of the great symphonic masterpieces and showpieces of all time, The Planets by Gustav Holst. And it is so colorful and so descriptive of not the physical bodies of the planets, because they are all spheres, basically, but actually the astrological and mythological personalities of all the gods. For example, Mars, the god of war, or Jupiter, the god of jollity. And it gives Holst this inspiration to write music that it's so extreme in its emotion, laughing at one point, demonic at another. It's people's favorite piece of music for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people go, I don't think I know that, but you say we would know that if we heard it. So let's take a little listen a bit to Mars. Thinking movie soundtrack? I mean,
this piece of music is perhaps one of the most stolen piece of music from classical music used in films and many other things. And as we learned from your engineer, that it was used literally from Star Trek.
I think Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. Dan, you want to play that?
Right.
There you go.
And it's so filmic. It's no wonder why composers, great composers like John Williams, borrowed ideas from Beethoven and Stravinsky and Holst for good reason. Is that this is before there was film, there was only classical music to spark the imagination.
Yeah, and I guess what's unusual about this is it's this elaborate score that uses unusual complex sounds, right? By using unusual instruments or several, right?
Yeah. Well, for example, there's a big solo by the euphonium that is not a common member of the orchestra. But what's interesting about this piece is that Mars is that it's lopsided rhythm. That it's most music is in 2-1-2-1-2 or 1-2-3-1-2-3-1-2-3-4. Mars is in 5. 1-2-3-4-5. 1-2-3-4-5. Very difficult to dance to, for sure. But it adds this sense of foreboding and the sense of just something's not right about it. And it's great for this piece of music in particular.
Right. And I guess Holst had been influenced by Stravinsky, who used 4 oboes, 4 bassoons for the Rite of Spring, right?
It's a huge orchestra. It's large and a great way for us to begin the season, an expensive way to begin the season.
I was going
to
say, yeah. You know, I'm going to ask you about that. You have this the great musicians that you pull together, and I know these people come in and audition. It kind of goes back to John's story. We're saying, these musicians who really want to make it. Mm-hmm. What does it take? I mean, I imagine you get lots of people who come through and audition for the symphony. Some make it, some don't. Mm-hmm. Do you leave people with, if they have that, maybe they're not quite there yet, do you encourage them, come back next time? I mean, how does that work?
I do. If someone, is obviously working hard and they're just at the beginning of their career, I do try to be encouraging, because auditioning is a scary, scary thing.
Oh, yeah.
You're sitting there almost naked, not literally. That'd be another kind of audition. they're sitting there, with just them and their instrument. Mm. And it's
nerves can get the best of you.
Yesterday, I was listening to a wonderful violinist and really quite trained, graduated from a great conservatory, and she got nervous. Mm. And I this is some advice I gave to her, and I try to do it in a very kind and unteacherly way. I said, don't forget how much you love to play your instrument, and then share that love with me. Mm. And if you leave the room, whether you get the job or not, having felt that love, then you're a success.
Yeah. Wow, that's great. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with Jung Ho Park, conductor and artistic director for the Cape Cod Symphony Orchestra. We're talking about the upcoming season and music education. If you'd like to chime in, 866-999-4626. Perhaps you'd like to tell us your story of discovering whatever instrument you play or what kind of music you make. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So back to the planets. Mm-hmm. We also have Jupiter. Tell us a little bit about Jupiter.
Yeah, Jupiter's the other famous planet from this series, and it is joy and laughter in music. I don't know how Holst came up with this idea, but it's just bubbling with giggles and pride. And it's also a very English piece. It sounds very, very, very English. There's a hymn in the middle of it that has become one of the great English national anthems.
All right, let's take a listen. Now, is this one as ripped off as Mars?
No, this.
No, but the doom and gloom one's the ripped off one. The joy one, not
well,
so much.
Actually, they're both ripped off. This was used in The Right Stuff, the movie launching of the first Apollo mission. And when the rocket ship is taking off, this music is being played.
Oh.
And it's very expensive for a studio to use this music because they have to pay rights for it.
So that's why they rip it off. Yeah.
That's why they slightly alter it. But the producers of the film knew that they had to have this piece of music, so they actually paid for it.
Yeah.
And by the way, that was
a big part of their budget then, right? Yeah.
It is, but you can hear it. It's just so joyous. And just as a note, this is not our performance. By the way, this is some other orchestra.
Yeah, we should say that. Yeah, and then you've also commissioned somebody to do two other pieces, two other planets. What are the
yes.
two other planets?
We're not the first to do this, but I think we're going to be hopefully one of the more successful attempts to do this. When Holst finishes the planets in Neptune, the Mystic, it is the most haunting way to end a piece. It has a women's chorus from the Falmouth and Chatham Chorale. They'll join us. They're singing off stage, and then they disappear slowly, and the door that they're singing through off stage closes.
Mm.
So you get this haunting evaporation of sound.
Mm.
What we've done is take that sound, and it, you'll hear it evaporate, and then they'll come back into the hall dramatically and sing this beautiful, gorgeous music written by a young composer from Boston, and it's the planet Pluto.
Oh, nice.
Pluto was not discovered at the time this piece was written, so we've added this planet.
Oh,
and
great.
I know it's been demoted a little bit from official status of planet, but
It's okay.
We still Pluto. And then we go into the last movement, another commission, Apollo.
Oh, nice. Oh, great.
Yes.
Oh, that'll be great. Let's talk to Dana, who's giving us a call from South Wellfleet. Hi, Dana.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I don't know. I heard that Holst was kind of bitter about the success of the planets at the expense of exposure of some of his other works. Oh, I don't know why. Jeez, if I had only written half of that, I could go to my grave.
Happy person, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. Anyway, Mr. Pak, I would love to say that I think you really inspired me to take an interest in music education again. I always had my doubts about it through school, but I think you're carrying on the legacy of Leonard Bernstein, who really took elitism out of music.
What a nice compliment, Dana.
That's the highest compliment anyone can give me, is that Leonard Bernstein, for me, was the greatest inspiration in making classical music. He would speak a language. He would, you know, those wonderful young people's concerts from CBS.
Mm-hmm.
He would sit down and play Beatles,
right.
Or he'd play Elvis Presley, and saying, "This is how Tchaikovsky is relating to this."
Yeah.
You know, and it was so brilliant. And you're right, Holst did have a certain kind of sadness that his other pieces were overshadowed by the planets. But same thing with Ravel. He felt his work Bolero overshadowed his other works too.
Yeah.
But you're right. If we can only write one great master, well, he wrote several masterpieces, but he certainly hit a home run with the planets.
Yeah, Dana, thanks for the call. Let's talk to Ruth, who's calling from West Harwich. Hi, Ruth.
Good morning. I totally agree with what Dana was saying about the enthusiasm of Mr. Pak there and the legacy of Leonard Bernstein in the education area. The whole show is wonderful today, as they all are. But I am particularly interested in having a resource for getting the details, which I was not able to write down fast enough at the beginning, for the program for introducing music in the schools and also to younger children, and I just would like to have the details, names, places, whatever, because they're is an area with which I'm involved, and I would like to see.
Ruth, how are you involved? Wait, what do you do? Are you
actually, I'm a retired clinical psychologist.
Oh, okay.
A very big interest in music and seeing the education be carried on elsewhere. And there's a particular school system which my grandchildren are.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay, so you're interested.
Where they bring in a rock playing guitar player once a month, and that's their musical education.
Oh boy,
I really would like to see something like what is going on here. So if I could.
Sure. Well, we'll put a link up on our website to theirs, but Cape Cod Conservatory, Cape Cod Symphony Orchestra, you get the...
Definitely. Talk to George Schar, who is our contact. He's also head of the Falmouth Conservatory. Yeah. The two programs I'm speaking about are called Music Memory, and you can easily Google that. And the other one is Music Works Every Day. And that's our title for it. The producers of the program are Brummitt Taylor, B-R-U-M-I-T-T, and Taylor. If you live in a neighborhood on the Cape and they don't have this program either in their in the elementary schools, contact George. He can come out and explain the program to the principals, and it's starting to spread like wildfire.
Yeah, well, so we've got 32 schools across the Cape right now, and they can talk to any of the other schools that are using it, Ruth, and I'm sure they'll sign up.
Every child deserves this.
Yeah, thanks, Ruth. Thanks for doing that. Thanks for calling. Joel is calling from Brewster. Hi, Joel.
Hi. You guys are talking about music stolen for the movies. I want to go way, way back to when I was a kid, and radio was doing a good job of that. Mm-hmm. This was before FM, frequency modulation. It was before TV. Mm-hmm. All there was AM radio.
That's right.
Amplitude modulation. But the Lone Ranger was there.
Of course.
And, of course, everybody knows about Rossini's...
William Tell.
Yeah.
Starting and closing theme for the Lone Ranger. Not many people know that's really supposed to be a storm at sea. Just before that clarion trumpet comes in, the orchestra quiets down to one oboe doing a very undulating tune, just like the calm before the storm where these heavy swells come in. But what a lot of people don't realize at all is that traveling music between the scenes of the Lone Ranger was one, Liszt, Les Preludes, and the other one was Les Hebrides or...
Mendelssohn, yes.
Mendelssohn?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
yes.
right, Joel.
I forget. And then there was a 15-minute mystery show that used Waltz Priest for the theme song.
So what you're saying, Joel, is something that I think Jung Ho already knows, is that films are not the only ones who were stealing this music. We had radio programs that did it as well. And
absolutely. Classical music was much more integral part of society back then. You had all these immigrants, European immigrants, Russian immigrants, Jewish immigrants. And so it was natural that these composers would refer to these composers. And you'd also hear it in popular music, too. Mm-hmm. Jazz, big bands would steal classical themes quite often, too.
Yeah. One of the things I remember when you came to the Cape Cod Symphony Orchestra was that, you know, jazz has this kind of improvisational aspect to it, that you were saying that you thought classical could do the same thing. That was one of your goals, to make it feel like it's happening right there in the moment.
That's right. It's amazing you remember that. Is that is one of my illusions that I try to bring to every concert, is that every moment that the musicians are playing, they're almost making it up passionately at that moment. That's the thing I'm so jealous about jazz, is that a jazz musician can do whatever they want.
Right.
It oftentimes it's not printed on the page, especially in a combo situation. When you have 80 people, 90 people, 100 people on stage singing and performing with that same sense of risk, then that is just, it's magical.
Yeah. All right, let's talk to Deb, who's calling from Woods Hole. Hi, Deb.
I'm a member of the Falmouth Band. Parents and my kids have really benefited from the music program in the Falmouth Public Schools. And I just wanted to commend this symphony and the Cape Cod Conservatory for their collaboration with the Falmouth Public Schools. They've just done wonderful programs bringing these symphony members in to teach the kids. And I know they're doing some master classes this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to thank them for reaching out to us.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. We're so proud of our connection to the public schools. I go into the classrooms. I give master classes. Our our musicians do that as well. We have to support the public school system, because without them, we really don't have the arts survive in our community at all. Mm-hmm. There are great public school teachers fighting the good fight out there, dealing with budgets that are being cut, and they're doing beautiful, beautiful work. Our responsibility is to support them as much as we can.
Deb, thanks for the phone call. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. And this is one of the things that is so perplexing, is when, you know, we have budget cuts, what's the first thing that seems to go are the arts. And they're so important. I mean, we have so much research that just shows how important the arts are.
You know, if you look at even the great entrepreneurs in this country, Steve Jobs, Thomas Edison, these people are not known for their technical expertise. Jobs was not an engineer. Mm. He was just a great marketer and a creative person. If we stifle creativity in our country, we will be no better than some of these other countries that are just producing robots as engineers. America's success is built on creativity, imagination.
Right. One program that we used to have that went away for a while, but I hear is coming back, is Composing Kids. That's coming back?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tell us about what Composing Kids is about.
Composing Kids was really one of the most unusual and unique programs that the symphony had. We bring in teachers, people like George and other people, to teach kids the process of composing a piece of music. These kids don't have any background necessarily of how to read music or even music appreciation. But through some good building blocks and good storytelling, they can actually collectively create a piece of music. Our musicians help them shape a piece of music, and then, believe it or not, it's performed by the Cape Cod Symphony.
Yeah, can you imagine what that's like for the kids who put that together? Just hear that and sit back and hear that.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about choosing an instrument, because this is always a tough thing. You know, the kids go, I mean, they might decide to do the clarinet, and you know, there's some programs in school you can choose an instrument. And then some kids, like, and I have a friend whose son said, "I want to play the bass." You know, I mean, it's how do you help your child discover which instrument is the one that's going to speak to them?
I could write a thesis on this. Is that, you know, oftentimes we choose instruments based on happenstance. Like it happens to be the only instrument left that the band director wanted you to play. Yeah. You know, and we search through, and sometimes we give up instruments because they're not the right fit, either physically for us or even psychologically. You know, sometimes we think of the flute player as being the all-American girl. Mm-hmm. You know, and the trumpet player as being the jock or something like that. There are stereotypes for a reason. The personalities match for a reason. I would say that the teacher has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people who've been turned off by an instrument because the teacher wasn't the right fit for the child. My strongest advice is that if a student is not marrying to an instrument quickly, don't give up. Mm-hmm. Try other instruments and try other teachers. Yeah. It's not to say that the teacher is good or bad, but it may not be the right fit.
Right. Have you heard that little Jonathan Ford, the kid who plays that Irish whistle, 10 years old? Unbelievable. We had him on about a month or so ago. Blow you away. It's the talent that this young man has is just unbelievable.
YouTube is filled with these young kids who play drums and trumpet. And it's amazing that when the child finds that right voice, it's like a fish to water.
Yeah, exactly. And I had a friend who played the tuba, and I thought, tuba? Why did you pick the tuba? You know, you got to lug that thing around, but he liked the tuba.
Or harp.
Yeah, right.
You got to be a good parent to let your child play the harp.
And then going back to, you know, folks who have maybe always wanted to play an instrument and never did, there's probably, you know, you think in the back of my mind, I always wished I could play the fiddle, or I always wished I could play the flute. Why not, right?
Absolutely. I mean, again, that's one of the fundamental philosophies that Stephanie at the conservatory and I share. We want every person to feel completely welcome. I know it's kind of, you feel uncomfortable, like, you know, oh, I'm walking into a school for kids. No, the conservatory is really a place for
all ages. Yeah. And then also, too, and I found my way back in because we did a program on the resurgence of the popularity of the ukulele, and they had a great group over on Nantucket. I think about 15 of them are just having a good time, and it's such an easy instrument to play. It's a great place to start, I think.
That's a great advertisement.
Yeah. Well, that's where I started. Now I'm on the harder mandolin, but we'll see how that goes. So we've got about 30 seconds or so left. Some other highlights coming up in the season that you're looking forward to?
We're going to end the season with Verdi's great great requiem. And we're going to, again, join the forces of the Chatham and Falmouth Chorale. In January, we're doing a concert all around the sexy and romantic music of Spain.
Oh, nice.
Yes, exactly. And we've got some great music of Beethoven in November. We're calling this a Mad Men concert in November, Martinis and Music. All the great instrumental hits of the 1950s and 60s in next month coming up.
All right, we'll put a link on our website to your website, capeandislands.org. Jung Ho Park, conductor and artistic director for the Cape Cod Symphony Orchestra. Always fun to see you. Thanks
Good
for
to
being
see you,
here.
Mindy.
Also want to thank John Nakamatsu for being with us earlier in the program. I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
Amy Vins produces The Point, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.